everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by nobody. Pete and I had kind of conflicting schedules today. Usually we would be recording today, this is Sunday, together, but we are going to push his day to tomorrow. Today I'm going to react quickly to the game. I don't want to get too far into the weeds on the preseason game from last night, just because the questions are going to take us there, and also because I want to talk to Pete about it. So I'm just going to give some quick observations in segment one, and then segment two and three, we'll get to the iTunes mailbag. Quick reminder, if you want to get your subject in or comment in or question in, the best way to do that is by leaving a five-star review on iTunes, and I promise I will get to those questions. Let's start, though, with that game. Just a few notes. The first note here being, holy crap, Anthony Davis is really good. Right? It's not, obviously, not exactly taking the world by storm with that observation. But the reason I say that and the reason I point this out is I think because of the way things went down in New Orleans and because of how bad an organization the Pelicans organization was over the, you know, the vast majority of his tenure in New Orleans, dare I say Anthony Davis became a little underrated. And I think last night, and hopefully much of the season, will kind of serve as a reminder, like, oh yeah, this is that guy. This is, you know, somebody who, when he was drafted, was considered one of the most talented draftees, especially up front, since like Tim Duncan. And, you know, it's not like he did much individually that would fly in the face of that observation heading into his career. So I that was my first takeaway there. Even Jen, you know, when we were watching the game, obviously I work here from home, and we were watching the game together, and she was like, "Holy crap, he's huge!" And that's kind of the thing here with Davis, is that there's very little that can be done to stop him from playing well. He is, like, he's just, basically, Draymond Green defends him about as well as anybody, right? Draymond has a low center of gravity. He moves him out of the paint. He makes him uncomfortable by playing really tight on him on jumpers and stuff. And even there, it's just, you got to hope he misses more often than not. And Davis last night, you know, and then I think for, especially given the types of looks that he's going to get with LeBron as a teammate, I don't think Davis is going to be doing too much missing. On the downside with Davis, I do kind of think he carried some of his bad habits in catching and shooting, especially from deep from previously. I thought he was going to spend a little bit more time cleaning that up. His three-point looks last night did not look very clean. And the reason I say this is he's going to have to be a really good three-point shooter if he wants to be not even a really good three-point shooter. He just has to keep, like, teams have to defend against his three-point shot. You know, they have to care that he shoots three-pointers. And if he wants to play the four alongside especially Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee, he's going to have to knock down three-point shots. And you know, a lot of why I think he struggles there has to do with his footwork. He catches the ball and his feet are still moving. You'd kind of like to see a little bit less movement down low so that, you know, through the shot, he has fewer things to worry about. But I would, you know, that was the one kind of negative takeaway that I had from watching him play. First and foremost, and like 85%, 90, 95% of what I walked away from the game watching him play was, oh yeah, this is going to be fun. This is going to be great. He's going to get dunks whenever he wants them. I liked the chemistry that he already started building, especially with JaVale, with looks, you know, high-low looks. That was kind of fun to watch. So, the, you know, everything that I saw from him, just about everything I saw from them, looked great. But I would like to, you know, I'm a little nervous about the shooting. I'm a little nervous about it. So we'll see if that comes around. It's only one game. Other things that I noticed from the game, when the Lakers were playing with LeBron as the point guard, I thought they looked great. I thought Avery Bradley, I think he could dial it back a little bit in terms of pressure. I think he over-pressured in some spots and got beat as a result every so often. I'm also a little bit worried that he's going to be able to play with that kind of intensity for 82 games. But when LeBron was out there and Bradley was out there, I really liked the way everything looked, and I think that's something that the Lakers should really rely on heavily for much of the year. My last takeaway, and you guys know I was going to say this, but way too much Rondo. Way too much Rondo. Like, it was an offensive portion of Rondo in that game, and it's the kind of thing that Vogel needs to be asked about this, like, repeatedly throughout the year. What are you doing? And especially given, like, this is heading into the game, my one thing other than, hey, enjoy the game, enjoy the idea of watching LeBron and Davis play side by side. I got to enjoy that. That was great. But my other kind of hope heading into the game was, I want to see what Caruso looks like against NBA players. I want to start to figure out what this guy actually is. We didn't see him until the second half. And he looked great out there. He looked way better than every... Honestly, he was the best player on the court while he was out there. And Cali agrees. And you know, we can't do this again. Like, the Lakers can't do this again, where Caruso gets spare minutes here and some breadcrumbs there and doesn't get a full, honest look. That would be another waste of a season here. And frankly, if this stuff continues, it's the idea of Alex Caruso demanding a trade is kind of funny. But if I was his representation, I would start kind of whispering, like, hey, if he can't sniff first half minutes with Rajon Rondo out there looking like I don't want to beat a dead horse, but Rajon Rondo is a literal dead horse. And if I'm Alex Caruso's representation, I start whispering, like, hey, my guy's got to get some more shine here. He's better. He's just flat out better. Politics be damned. Get Caruso some minutes out there. Get Rondo the fuck off the court and make everybody's life better. Last takeaway here, other than the Caruso and the Rondo thing, I thought Vogel coached a pretty good game. I like the way that he manages LeBron and AD's minutes in the first half while those two guys were playing. It's easier to do this in a first half, right, when you aren't hoping to stretch guys for the entirety of a 48-minute game. But in that first half, I don't think there was any time where either LeBron or Davis was not on the court. I thought that was a great thing. KCP didn't look great. I hope that was just a blip on the radar, because if that's the KCP that the Lakers get, then he probably shouldn't play this year. He should probably just be exiled to, I don't know, whatever league clutch wants to put him in. But yeah, other than that, I thought it was a great game. I thought that, especially the parts where the Lakers had their guys on the court, I thought the Lakers looked by far the better team. Now, Golden State is obviously banged up. They are trying to work D'Angelo Russell into the mix. Klay Thompson isn't there. They started Omari Spellman at center, right? So it wasn't the kind of team that you walk away from and say, oh yeah, that was a legit win. No, I wouldn't go that far. But it was overall the things that mostly you wanted to see, you got to see, especially from Davis. Davis is a real deal, so that was great. All right, let's take a quick second. When we come back, I'm going to start answering your guys' questions. All right, first question here comes from OzaGal89. First off, I don't care what anyone else says. Anthony, you're the LeBron or AD of this podcast. I appreciate that. Seeing as there are only two people on this podcast, I would hope that I'm either the AD or LeBron. Right. Like, imagine having a two-person podcast and then somebody saying you're the third best player on that team. Your mic is great and your co-host is great, but you... you know, a little work. Anyway, I appreciate that, though. Love your work. Keep it up. Question. The Lakers' first practice featured Rondo Green, Braun, and AD and McGee as the starting lineup. Do you think this is changing before the start of the preseason? Obviously, it did. Bradley started in Rondo's spot. The other thing I'm kind of interested to see, so Vogel said that he was going to kind of mix around starting lineups and groups and stuff like this, so maybe he was just, like, that was the Rondo game, right? That was Vogel saying to Rondo, all right, show me what you got. Rondo didn't show very much, and now, you know, they get to tweak the rotation from there. So maybe that's what that was. That's my hope, certainly. Next question comes from Vontae35. What do Locked On Lakers fans such as myself need to do to be in a fantasy basketball league with you? I've been thinking about getting back into fantasy basketball, but my season is so jumbled, and I got this kid now. I probably do more daily fantasy than anything, but it would be nice to get back in. Maybe we'll see how the preseason goes. We'll see how the preseason goes, and maybe I can create like a Locked On Lakers fantasy basketball league, and we'll see how if anybody's interested. Next question comes from Assess the Threat. Hey, Anthony and or Pete, preferably both. I want to get as many different people's thoughts on this as I can. So the question here is whether, like, how the league would look if they outlawed screening. I don't even know, like, I don't know how you would police that, right? Like, you have that in the NFL where they try to call offensive PI on pick plays as often, you know, whenever they see it. But even that, like, you can kind of shadow those things. So I think what teams would probably wind up doing is they would send kind of like crisscross cuts where, so, for example, this is a really rudimentary example, but if you have the point guard has the ball up at the top and you have two shooters on each side, you know, each wing or whatever, each corner even, and you send each shooter across the baseline for each other and you just tell one shooter, hey, your job is to make sure the other defender can't follow the shooter on coming from the other side of the court, right? Like, you can send these crossing routes, basically, where one player isn't even designated to get the ball. And when that player who isn't designated to get the ball runs near the player who is supposed to get the ball, they kind of tweak their route to make sure the opposing defender, without making it too obvious, can't keep up with hit the guy that he's guarding, and you get stuff like that. So I think that's kind of how that winds up looking. The pick and roll dynamic of this is kind of interesting. If you do like a handoff and you know, it's more of a brush screen instead of like an actual screen. I wonder if that would be policed enough. So basically, the thing that you would run into is the league mandates that every player is owed their personal space on a basketball court. Makes sense. If that player is now running in one shape or form to their spot, they are kind of sort of owed that route to that spot, right? Within reason. There are things defenders can do. You can knock them off their line or whatever, but you can't like hold them and stuff. So I wonder if offensive strategists would just basically try to take full advantage of that rule and just say, you know, just create cuts that go away from the basket rather than all towards the basket, you know, and rather than having the cut be something that is supposed to get the ball at the end of that cut is just basically to run in line with one of the other cuts out there who is supposed to get the ball. I think that's how that goes. But I'll run that by Pete. That's an interesting question. LA 1056 writes, is Vogel... So I saw the clip of Vogel preaching his verticality gospel that he is known for in Indy with Hibbert. We know AD is a force defensively and already alters plenty of shots, but do you think the philosophy of protecting the rim properly instead of just blocking shots will help with the defensive ability of our bigs. Everyone loves a great weak side block, but JaVale is a known block hunter, and AD can always find new ways to clean up his defense. Well, the players that you're talking about, JaVale, Dwight, even AD, they are the players that they are. So, like, asking JaVale, hey, stop hunting blocks, is just not going to happen. That's you're teaching an old dog a new trick there, right? It's like me asking Callie, when you see a squirrel, please don't bark. I could tell her all I want, but it's probably not going to go over very well. It's not going to be very effective. What I do think, though, is, because even with Hibbert, right, like they kind of changed the rules a little bit and it made him antiquated, like as we were watching, he became useless out there. So I kind of think Vogel is a person who has to tweak the way that he approaches defending and protecting the rim. It was interesting. Dwight had a play yesterday where there's a player dribbling at him going towards the basket. And instead of watching the person who had the ball, he actually kind of peeled off and paid way more attention to the person who might receive a pass closer to the rim. That struck me as interesting. And it's something that I'm going to watch, you know, is this a trend that's actually going to hold out over the course of the season? It's something I'm really going to pay attention to, where are the Lakers going to just, because they have three bigs that you can funnel towards the basket with, but are they going to, how close to the basket are they going to funnel them? And are they going to have the bigs, you know, kind of, how are they going to treat that ball handler as they approach the basket? So it's a good question, but I actually think I would flip it. I would flip it on its head, and I would say instead of asking guys like Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee and even Anthony Davis, who have been in the league now for going on a decade, instead of asking them to change their approach, I would, if I were in Vogel, I would kind of ask myself, is there a better way to utilize these guys that doesn't require kind of an antiquated way of protecting the rim? But that's not to say that you don't use verticality ever. I think you're still going to use, you'd be remiss not to use verticality with guys who can jump as high and are as long as Dwight Howard and JaVale and Anthony Davis. They're going to use verticality, and they're going to try to take advantage of their physical tools as best they can. I'm just saying, I don't think that's going to be like some kind of golden rule that everybody on the team has to abide by. All right, let's take a quick second here. When we come back, I'm going to finish off with a few more of your questions. All right, McNugget 2483 writes, there was a narrative last year when LeBron came that the Lakers needed LeBron more than LeBron needed the Lakers. Do you believe that narrative was accurate? Also, do you think it's changed after his first year being what it was? And if it's changed with LeBron being more buying it, or with LeBron buying into Laker culture and embracing the past greats? I think that was something he was always interested in. Look, there is maybe no player, maybe no athlete in American pro sports who better understands branding himself or herself better than LeBron. There is nobody out there who gets that. So for LeBron, he knows what sells with Laker fans. Laker fans love their team's incredible history, as they should. It's something that we should all take pride in, right? So I think when he you know, kind of sells himself and talks about past greats, I think he respects those greats, obviously, but I think he kind of knows what he's doing there. But in terms of the first question, that's an interesting one. I didn't really know how to handle that narrative. I think at first, the Lakers did need LeBron more than LeBron needed the Lakers. The Lakers were coming off of easily, like inarguably, the worst stretch in franchise history. Like, nothing comes close. And they now land this player who alters franchises no matter where he goes. He is basically usually a ticket to the playoffs. Except he wasn't last year. So I think when he first got to the Lakers, yeah, I think they definitely needed him more than he needed them. But I think now, given the way last year went and given the questions that surround LeBron heading into this year, I think you have a lot closer to an even split, like a 50-50. We need each other as much as the other needs us. And that makes, in my opinion, for something that's really going to be a driving force to whatever success the Lakers have this year. And I can't wait to see what that looks like, especially for a player like LeBron. Like, at Media Day, he cut off Allie Clifton. When she was talking about extra motivation, he said, no, I'm extra motivated. And he did the same kind of thing. It was kind of a continuation of the act that he was using with the media at large. But it was still evident. He wants it known. I'm pissed off by how last year went. I'm pissed off by the conversations that I've noticed about the NBA heading into this season, especially in terms of individual talent. That stuff pissed him off. And he's kind of deserves some of the blame for why the conversations are being held the way that they are. So it's interesting. That's a great, great question. And it's something that I think we're going to be able to watch over the course of the entire year, maybe even the entire tenure of LeBron's time out here with the Lakers. Big Pimpin asks, hey, Anthony, a little change of pace with a free agent inquiry. What is the best case scenario next summer if Anthony Davis leaves? Also, Rondo, seriously, dang it, Frank. I agree. There is no best case scenario. If Anthony Davis leaves, the Lakers are screwed. They are like Armageddon screwed. The kind of screwed that, frankly, I'm not even kidding. If Anthony Davis leaves in free agency, not only does Rob Pelinka get fired, right? Because that was his grand investment. He traded away everything to get Anthony Davis. But I think there would be an outcry to have Jeannie Buss give up her governorship of the Lakers. I don't think she would. I think that's a part of her identity. But if Anthony Davis leaves, then the entire Lakers organization goes, like, faces the mirror in ways that it has never done before. Even with Magic, right? Magic resigns the way that he does, but you could still say, well, the Lakers still have LeBron. There's a good chance they could walk away with Anthony Davis, maybe even Anthony Davis and Kawhi Leonard next summer. We'll see how this thing goes. But if Anthony Davis leaves, there is no, well, but there isn't. Everybody is on the chopping block. The Rambai are gone. Again, Rob Pelinka is gone. The idea of Lakers exceptionalism is gone. Like, you have to now completely recreate your brand for a fan base that is pissed off. All that said, I don't think he's leaving. Because even, like, with all the things I said about LeBron, or everything that I said about the Lakers and their approach to everything, Anthony Davis wouldn't look great by leaving the Lakers either. He spent like a year and a half trying to get to the Lakers, threw an entire organization under the bus. And if he leaves after the Lakers, say, you know, fall short of expectations, after, you know, for Davis especially, because the question with him is, he's this incredible individual talent. Why hasn't he had team success? Well, this is the kind of team that he should have success with. And if he leaves as a result of not having success, he would face as many questions as the Lakers do. And look, we saw it with Dwight. He left the Lakers. And things haven't gone great for him. Not to say that there's a direct correlation there, but like, the Lakers kind of got away with one, right? They dodged a bullet with Dwight Howard leaving. So, yeah, maybe there are names out there that the Lakers can kind of salvage and make for a somewhat competitive team, but make no two wrongs about it. Like, there's no beating around the bush here. The Lakers would be screwed in a way that means everybody is gone. They completely clean house. And you know what? They would have to. Yifan Yu writes, hi, Anthony and Pete, longtime listener. Love the work you guys produce. I just want to add to the Kyle Kuzma media presence conversations you had. Being a Laker actually helped Kuzma become an endorser for Dekos, the third largest fast food chain in China behind McDonald's and KFC. I saw him on a Dekos poster on Chinese social media and found that super interesting. There's no way Kuzma's getting that deal without being on the Lakers. So, yeah, I mean, they're adding to the conversation there about Kuzma and by extension what the Lakers do for people's platforms. And, yeah, that's absolutely something that we need to continue to pay close attention to while, you know, that's the selling point. Like, right now, the problem that the NBA is facing with its superstars is that there's a lot more money to be made off of the court than there is to be made on it. So yes, these guys can sign their supermax contracts or whatever, and that can keep them in that city, and that's all fine and good. But these the guys at the cream of the crop, the cream of the NBA's crop, they're starting to realize, wait, I could sign for a little bit less than that, or I could sign for the full max, right? That way I can still say I'm a max player, but go to a city that lifts my platform and do more than make up for the money I pass up on in the transaction of leaving that first place that could have offered me that supermax contract, right? And the NBA can't do anything about that. It's not like the NBA can tell these superstars, hey, you're not allowed to make money outside of the NBA. That's illegal. It's unconstitutional. So what does the NBA do about this? I have no idea. And it's fascinating. It's great to be able to watch it. And the team that benefits from this about as much as anybody is the Los Angeles Lakers, because that's their thing. They can tell all these teams. Look at any other team across not just the NBA, but maybe even professional sports. Find me another team that has produced as many financial tycoons as the Lakers have. Magic Johnson, billionaire. Shaq, on his way to becoming a billionaire. Kobe, well on his way to becoming a billionaire as well, right? And like the Cowboys might be able to make a case for that, I think. With I think Staubach is like a real estate tycoon out there. But for the most part, there are very few teams out there in American professional sports that offer that kind of a resume, that kind of a trend, where if you are a superstar and you win at the levels of Kobe, Shaq, Magic, whatever, we can help you attain levels of wealth that just completely overshadow the money that you give up by re-signing to a supermax contract in Milwaukee, right? That's the big selling point here. And that's the thing that the NBA is probably most nervous about, I think, is that there's nothing that they can do to stop that stuff from happening. And they're trying to hammer home the tampering thing and this and that. And they will be the first to try to push out there that, you know, teams and markets don't matter, but they do. The Lakers have shown that. Kyle Kuzma is the latest example of that. Anthony Davis is going to be the next biggest example of that. LeBron is going to be an example of that. And there isn't anything the NBA can do to stop it. Let's go with one more question here. Nick A29 writes, hey, Anthony, which role player would mean more to the team if he blew up and averaged 20? Dwight Howard or Kyle Kuzma? Kuzma. Because of the way that he would get those 20 points per game. Kuzma would do a lot of that from the perimeter, right? If Kuzma goes on to average 20 points and does so shooting like 6 3-pointers a game, making, you know, about 2.5 of those per game or whatever the number might be, right? It'd have to be under 3, but like 2.5 of those 6 3-pointers a game, and is also getting to the line and is scoring efficiently, like that would mean more to the Lakers than Dwight Howard dunking 10 times per game. Because Dwight Howard's production is replaceable by one of the superstars that the Lakers already employ in Anthony Davis. But Kuzma's brand of production, especially from the small forward spot, is not something the Lakers have elsewhere on the roster. They do have LeBron James, but at this point in his career, he's more of a power forward. And if you can have Kyle Kuzma out there averaging 20 alongside LeBron and and Anthony Davis, that's pretty tough to guard. That's pretty tough to guard, especially because we know Danny Green's going to be able to hit shots. And hopefully it isn't Rondo back there at the, as the point guard, right? And if it's Caruso, like Caruso shot the ball really well again last night. His shot looks clean. You had Troy Daniels out there who looked really, really good. Quinn Cook can knock down shots. So if you have guys out there like that, and Kyle Kuzma is helping space the floor with his 20 points per game, and teams have to affect the way that they approach guarding the Lakers because of the way that Kyle Kuzma is producing, that's perfect. That's great. All right, that'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Thank you guys very much for sending in your questions and for listening today. Pete will be back tomorrow, and he and I will get a little bit more into the weeds on things that we noticed from the game. I'm going to rewatch the game tonight. Shouts to the Vikings for covering for my own entertainment purposes only. Have a great rest of your day, everybody. Make somebody else's, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.